This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com. The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, before we get started with our guest of the week, Dr. Z, I should put that in echoes. That's Dr. Emily Zarka, and we'll be talking about her interest in monsters through history. But we're going to talk about last week's episode, which we did with Stephen Bassett. And what pleases me is the reaction we got, which is in the past when Stephen Bassett said disclosure, disclosure, people said, ignore him. Now they realize the guy is not selling your product. This is what he believes, and he's trying real hard to get something there. It doesn't mean I expect that tomorrow the government's going to say we're being visited by ET or anything like that. But I think he's trying, and nothing wrong with that. Right, Randall?
I actually like Stephen. He's been very consistent and persistent for a lot of years trying to get people to take the idea of alien visitation seriously. There are reasons to take it seriously, so more power to him. It was really interesting what we got into with him on the last show, and that's this bill that they were talking about with the Defense Intelligence to be able to get a report from the various agencies on what they have found out about what they're calling, of course, UAP. While that might not mean an alien craft, but if they listen to these recommendations for this bill, we might actually see some sort of disclosure.
Well, there's always a bit of hope there, but I'm jaded. I'm jaded because I've been following pleas for disclosure now for over 50 years. A lot more than 50 years, and we never see it. We came close, maybe we thought, in the late 60s, when Congress held hearings on UFOs, led by Congressman Gerald Ford. And that led us to the Condon Committee, and that didn't do a darn thing. Dr. Z, welcome to the PowerCast. I'm really looking forward on talking with you. But have you had any interest in UFOs at all? And one of the reasons I ask is because one of the videos that you shot was about Mothman, and Mothman has always had some kind of peripheral connection with UFOs.
Hi, yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. I've always been fascinated by UFOs, those sort of unidentified aerial phenomenon from more of an alien perspective and the monster creation. And I do agree with you that I think, mostly due to John Keel, that we have started associating Mothman with the Men in Black and with UFOs. But from the people I talk to in the town of Point Pleasant, at least today, the whole alien concept doesn't really seem to be something that's very predominant to them now.
I'm going to ask you first before we go on with Mothman.
Yeah, of course.
How did you get involved in this? Because I like what's happening here where it says that you approach literature and film through monsters. And I'm an old monster movie buff, but I mean like the monster films of the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
And one of my very, very, very slight acquaintances over the years was the late Forrest J. Ackerman, if you ever heard of him. He had a magazine called Famous Monsters of Filmland, and he emphasized the monster movies through the 50s and 60s and such. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I grew up as a huge fan of horror films and horror books. I was reading Stephen King at probably a way too young age, but my PhD is actually in literature. But my approach to literature and history in general is I view it from a structuralist and historicist perspective, meaning I don't think anything exists in a bubble or in a vacuum, that there's all these different contributing elements coming from all different angles when any kind of narrative is constructed. So as I was working on my dissertation, which was about the undead in the British Romantic period, I became really interested in teaching film and media and looking at how literature and film and video games and art have portrayed these seemingly fantastic or supernatural creatures. And when I approached PBS with the idea for the show, I pitched it by saying, I want to do for monsters what Anthony Bourdain did for food, meaning that I want to try to make broader global cultural connections by pointing out something we all have, which is fear of the unknown.
This show, let's talk about that right away. That's on PBS. This show is called Storied. It's a creation of PBS Digital Studios with close to 300,000 subscribers on YouTube, one more now that I've joined. Its mission is to show how we can better understand ourselves through art and culture, from mythology to movies to design and much more. It delves into the historical origins of monsters, books, video games, films, and works of art. And this includes your show, the one that you host called Monstrum. And I've watched a number of episodes now, and they're wonderful.
Thank you so much. They're really a labor of love, and there's so many different people that go into it. My production company, Spotson, that I work with is great. PBS and PBS Digital Studios are fantastic, and luckily they give me quite a bit of creativity and free reign. Monstrum was the show that sort of started Storied, and we're really excited to see it growing from the response of the audience.
Now, right now, it's available on YouTube?
Yes. Also, PBS.org.
Oh, okay. Is it ever going to be on the regular PBS broadcast stations?
It is funny that you say that. So I can't say too much at this point right now, but we are looking at potentially a broadcast tie-in with Monstrum coming up sooner rather than later. So I can't give too many details, but I can say that we will hopefully be announcing something very soon on that front.
Well, I really hope you do. I'm a big monster movie buff, as I said. I grew up watching the classic horror movies from the 30s and 40s from Universal, particularly the Frankenstein, yeah, Dracula, Wolfman. And the thing I observed, which is what I don't like about the current films, is then they suggested the horror. They didn't show it in bright red blood. I mean, Hammer Films did that in the 50s, as you probably know. But and even then, though, the films had great acting and performances from people like Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing. Christopher Lee, of course, people remember from doing one of the James Bond films.
Yeah.
And Peter Cushing, of course, from Star Wars. They did all those Frankenstein, Dracula movies. And even though they were more graphic, essentially, these films were very well done in terms of production values. And again, it's not like you use the technique of just startling people. You know, wow, oh my God, there's Jack Nicholson saying, here's Johnny or something.
Yeah.
I mean, they had to suggest it. This is especially true when you get back to the 30s, where they had to be very careful. So something like Dracula, I understand Dracula when it was on Broadway and Bela Lugosi was, you know, originator, people were screaming and the film was very mild and, you know, to me, almost dull. But I loved the film because of the acting and the stories were fun. So what do you think in the sense of horror films? Do you think it's because I'm an old guy or what?
No, I don't think it's that. I think that, like so many things, this aspect of our culture, again, all narratives, all storytelling, really is a product of the time period and things going on scientifically, culturally, politically. Again, nothing exists in a bubble. So my gut reaction to that is the way filmmaking is approached now, in general, tends to lead more towards those big dramatic moments, and a lot of the big budget filming goes into creating those sort of huge films, like you said, that are maybe more violent or have this high production value and maybe a little bit less story. Although I do think that's changing, and I do think in the last 5 years in particular with horror movies, we've seen a return, maybe not to, you know, those sort of simple, in the case of like Night of the Living Dead or White Zombie, black and white type films, but more emphasis on the human characters. I'm thinking of Us, Get Out, The Lodge, couple other, even Paranormal Activity, right? Taking out some of the gore aspects for those really deep psychological themes. And I think that we're seeing more of that.
Dr. Emily Zarka is talking to us about monsters. And we're looking at the mythology of monsters, but also, can any of these creatures be real? More to come with Gina Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
When you have a pain in the neck, a real pain in the neck, back, shoulder, or legs, you now have two convenient choices to get fast relief without taking another pill. Because now, Sunny Bay heating wraps and pillows are available at both Amazon and Walmart. Yes, see Sunny Bay's 4.5 to 5-star customer reviews on Amazon.com or Walmart.com. Our made in the USA microwavable heat wraps, heatable neck pillows, and extra large body wraps are designed better for perfect support where and when you need it. Even while driving, Sunny Bay wraps will not burn and stay balanced to provide soothing hot or cold therapy to help treat temporary or chronic pain. And the best part? Sunny Bay quality products start at under $20. Join thousands of happy customers and see why Sunny Bay products have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy. It's easy. Click Amazon or Walmart and search today for Sunny Bay.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American made with American ingredients employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
This is George Norrie from Coast to Coast AM and History Channel's Ancient Aliens. We support the amazing energy, nutrition, and skincare products from Jeunesse. Jeunesse products are designed by leading doctors in their field with natural ingredients and even stem cell technology. These products help your body perform and look better. Shop Jeunesse at GCNLife.com or call 1-844-443-6637. GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We continue with Dr. Z. Now, that's an interesting thing, too. We have the myth of monsters going back through history. Mm-hmm. Any of that at all possibly related to something real?
I think it depends on how you define real. I'm constantly asked doing this show and my research, you know, do you think that so-and-so actually saw this? Was there really some giant marsupial creature prowling around killing people, you know, 50 years ago? And my response to that is I care less about whether or not the creature existed in some form rather than why we have decided to keep telling those stories or recording them in the first place. So yes, do I think that some monsters might be based on the fossil record or in some kind of oral tradition passed down from our earlier ancestors about creatures that no longer exist? Yes. Do I think that there was a fire-breathing winged dragon flying around terrorizing people? No, I do not. But I'm not here to tell people back then or now if their experiences really happened. I think that people experience phenomena and strangeness and fear in so many different ways.
Well, that is so true. One of the things I was noticing going through the various shows that you have on the list on your channel is that there are a few that cross over with the theme of the alien. And in a way, I guess almost all monsters are kind of alien in a way. They are woven into our cultural fabric. Mm-hmm. There nowadays, I don't think that you can find a place where somebody doesn't know about aliens. In some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And, of course, aliens are. We've got this typical gray creature, which can be seen as a monster. How does that, in your opinion, and I haven't seen one on the episode yet specifically on aliens, like the grays or something like mm-hmm. that. How should we be looking at that from a cultural perspective? I mean, we've got festivals, we've got conferences, we've got TV shows, all the way. It's into our commercial advertising.
Yeah. I think it's crazy. Yeah, we did Martians, but we haven't, you know, dived into more recent alien phenomena. But I do think in general, my definition of a monster is anything that defies normalcy, whether that's in physical appearance or social behavior, basically anything that's seen as deviant. So, of course, some crazy looking creature from another planet would be weird and strange to us, but sometimes it's also maybe someone infected with rabies or who has some kind of mental illness that is perceived as being an outsider in society. So I think, and this is personally, I think we've seen an uptick in identification with monsters and their globalization in part because of the increase in technology and communication that we've had, obviously, in the last century and 100 years, arguably, even before that. But I think that with things like the internet and the more we talk about these things, the more people feel like I'm not alone. So it's almost as if these monsters, these others, these outsiders have created a fellow community of other people who feel disenfranchised or disassociated from certain parts of their various cultures. And I think that's something that's actually really beautiful about monsters. I think that monsters can be scary, but I don't think all monsters are scary. It depends on who's interacting with them and at what time period and what your perspective essentially of that outsider or monster actually is.
It just really reminds me of the whole Beauty and the Beast thing. Doesn't it? Where we don't necessarily have to think of them as being these evil creatures. Mm-hmm. They just might be misunderstood, and that can be a reflection of our own personality.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Absolutely.
Another thing I find really interesting is there does seem to be an element of realness to the monsters in that people do claim to have experienced sensing them through their various perceptual means, eyes, sight, smell, touch. So for them, it's a real experience, but it also seems like that the phenomena, if we just want to call it a phenomena rather than anything necessarily specific, because maybe we're dealing with the same thing in all cases, but it's manifesting itself differently. But the phenomena tends to mirror the worldview of the experiencer.
I think that's completely true. I mean, and you have to think about it too, if something's a strange phenomena or not, if you've been introduced to that idea before. I mean, there are monsters and creatures in different parts of the world that people in the United States would not recognize at all, simply because we don't have the cultural knowledge about them. A really good example, I just did an episode on the Australian Bunyip, which is a monster that dwells in small inland water areas in Australia. When European colonizers came to Australia, they flat out believed this creature was real. And they thought they would be able to find a specimen, not just fossils, but a living specimen. Partially because they're encountering things like the platypus, which the indigenous peoples of Australia didn't necessarily see it as monstrous, because that was part of, you know, the fauna that they lived with every day. But if you take someone from different culture, different perspective, and put them into an environment where they don't understand the aspects of that area, both culturally and physically, you might have different definitions of monsters. The same thing can be said for people who portray the creature in Frankenstein as being a tragic hero rather than, you know, some bloodthirsty monster. So I think you're right. A lot of the time it really is about perspective. And I think that when we approach either some kind of phenomenon like you suggested, or even a horror movie or horror book, our own worldview is part of how we determine if that thing is scary or not.
Now, I read the original book Frankenstein a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But remember, the original monster was a monster more by virtue of how he came to be. He was able to speak perfectly normally, you know, unlike making moaning sounds like Boris Karloff did.
Yeah.
But even then, when Boris Karloff played the Frankenstein monster, he always tried to make him sympathetic, which was a tribute to his acting ability.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to make you feel sorry for this creature, even if he did really horrible things.
Yeah, I think that the original author of Frankenstein, Mary Shelley, even in 1818, would argue, I think from my perspective, again, because I am a romanticist, so she fits into my time period, I think she meant him to be sympathetic. Scholars back then and today still, you know, argue about all the different themes, which to me is the hallmark of any good story in general, that people can keep returning to it and interpreting it in different ways. But I think that the creature and Boris Karloff and the longevity of Frankenstein and his creature and all these different iterations is exactly what you said. There's an identifiable aspect in how the actor portrays it or how the story is portraying that being. I think we can say that for all monsters. I think that the sympathetic monster is sympathetic, or not only because of maybe how an actor portrays it, but because of how we as the audience receive it. If we can identify with a monster, regardless of what it looks like in any capacity, I think that we make that emotional connection and fear becomes something different.
Certainly, I think that when it comes to werewolves and the Wolfman, amongst all the people who played that character, Lon Chaney Jr.
Mm-hmm.
had great acting ability, and he was able to convey sympathy. This guy surely didn't want to be what he had become, but he had to put up with it. Now we've got more to come. A monster's coming to us. I'm sorry, that's a bad imitation with Dr. Z. Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Houseflies defecate every 4 to 5 minutes, spreading diseases and germs. Protect your food and your health with Bug Assault, a miniaturized shotgun which utilizes ordinary table salt as ammunition. Non-toxic, no batteries required, only $39.95. Use discount code GCN and get an extra 10% off your purchase at bugassault.com. Fire your fly swatter. Get your Bug Assault today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Yeah. USA Radio News with John Hunt.
At Mount Rushmore, President Donald Trump gave his 4th of July speech to an enthusiastic crowd. And during the speech, he warned that protesters who destroy monuments would be punished to the fullest extent of the law, and that he's planning some brand new monuments for the United States.
I am signing an executive order to establish the National Guard of American Heroes, a vast outdoor park that will feature the statues of the greatest Americans to ever live.
And in the president's motivational speech, he reminded Americans that we will make it through these tough times.
America's future is in our hands, and ladies and gentlemen, the best is yet to come.
Enjoy your 4th of July. This is USA Radio News. A member of the president's inner circle has tested positive for COVID-19, and USA's Wendy King reports.
President Trump's son, Don Jr., is in self-isolation. He tested negative for the coronavirus, but his girlfriend, Kimberly Guilfoyle, tested positive. A Trump campaign official says she was immediately isolated in order to limit exposure to anyone else. They're also saying she's not showing any symptoms of the disease. They'd been in South Dakota to help with fundraisers for the president's re-election campaign. For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King.
A 27-year-old man drove a car onto a closed freeway in Seattle and barreled through a panicked crowd of protesters, critically injuring two women. Dawit Kelty of Seattle drove his car around vehicles that were blocking Interstate 5 and intentionally sped into the crowd, according to the report released by the Washington State Patrol. The two women are in critical condition, according to Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. This is USA Radio News.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
This is the Merciless. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio, exactly according to my plan.
I shan't try to imitate Bela Lugosi at all, you know. At least, you know, with Boris Karloff. Anyway, let's get back to the monsters and trying to understand where they fit in our society and everything. Now, we're looking at monsters as myths and everything, but obviously there are people out there, Dr. Z, who believe they're real or were real, and that takes us back to the Mothman.
Yes.
Now, when you decided to explore this, obviously you did some research. You're familiar with certainly the work of John Keel. What led you to pick this particular example? Because of its being somewhat recent?
Yeah, we wanted to do something recent. PBS, that was actually one of the episodes that became the interstitial, meaning that it was one of the first that, you know, the actual television broadcast could decide to play on their station. So we wanted to do something that felt very more like an American monster. And I, in doing research, found something so compelling about the different accounts of Mothman sightings. And then I learned about, you know, the Mothman Festival that happens every year. And I thought that was just so interesting and different from other monsters that we see, although monsters are largely celebrated in different parts of the world. But I thought it was really interesting type of cryptid. And you mentioned werewolves previously. We see a lot more of that kind of humanoid animal type monster where it's something that seems more predatory or threatening. But the idea of a moth and a human combine into a monster, I thought was fascinating and bizarre in all the best ways. So yes, I did a ton of research about it and then went to Point Pleasant with an open mind and talked to some locals and some experts there, went and actually got to see where Mothman was originally sighted on the road and sort of explore the woods in that area. And that was probably the first time in a long time that I had the chance to, of course, not experience what the original eyewitnesses did, but to get a sense physically of the atmosphere and the environment in which these kinds of creatures are created, for lack of a better way of putting it. It was raining and dark the whole time we were filming, pretty much, and there was something very eerie about being in these woods with these now abandoned buildings, and it's silent, and there's no lights around there at night. Everything is pitch dark. So the Mothman made a little bit more sense once I'd had the experience in the physical environment.
Yeah, forests can be really unsettling places. People love them. I do too. I'm a tree hugger. I love nature. But sometimes when you get out there and you're by yourself, and I've worked out there, you can get those feelings like you're being watched, and you get all your hair stand up on end, and you know, or you feel like it's just something weird about being in the forest. And forests seem to figure fairly prominently in a number of these myths, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that nature in general figures for a lot of these myths because, as you mentioned, it is so eerie. I think we've seen less of that sort of type of woodland or maybe even, you know, nature-based monster in the last 50 to 100 years because of things like increased urbanization and having more electricity and lighting in different places. I think that as we explore more of these areas that we have here on Earth, I think that they become less mythic, and then those scary experiences aren't necessarily there. But I'm totally with you. I've definitely been in the woods. I grew up a little bit in Vermont where you feel like something is watching you. Because it probably is. I mean, anyone who's been in a forest, we know that there's all these crazy animals and bugs and critters just watching you all the time. But I think that, again, as fewer and fewer people maybe have those experiences, that could be one of the reasons we lean towards something more like a UFO or an alien or a deep sea monster. I think that's just one of the ways in which increased technology and history can actually change the type of monsters that we see.
Well, that makes perfect sense because forests used to be the unknown.
Yeah.
I mean, people would look up at the sky, and actually the sky was fairly obvious. You could just look up there and you could see the stars, and while they might be the realm of something up there, you could see up there pretty easily. But you look into a forest and it's dark and shaded. You can't tell what's in there until you go in there and investigate it. Nowadays, not so much. We fly over them. We cut them down. They're just used as a resource.
Also, some people feel that a dying resource. Let me just throw back to the chase here with Mothman. That is, did these people see something really weird or what?
Personal opinion?
Absolutely.
I think that not all people, but I do think some people did see something strange. Do I think that thing was an extraterrestrial creature? No, I do not. I personally think that it was likely some kind of bird, which I know is controversial to some people, but I think that I'm a huge bird person in general, and they're super weird in so many ways. But my personal theory is it was maybe something like a sandhill crane, so some kind of bird or animal that was unfamiliar to hunters and locals in the area, or potentially was maybe even deformed in some way genetically through just mutation, and they saw something. I do believe that people did see something. But like I said before, I don't think that's true for everyone. Who am I to say that someone who saw, you know, a sandhill crane flying at night, if they experienced that thing as Mothman, that's their perspective. Who am I to say that, you know, their eyesight was bad or that, you know, they're somehow lacking in some kind of intelligence? I don't feel that way at all.
Would you tell people what this crane is and why people might perceive it as being something really out there?
Yeah, so the sandhill crane is a bird that pops up in places like Point Pleasant, West Virginia, but it's not necessarily endemic to the area. for migration might be there, and it's popped up actually in other places like Chicago where there have been Mothman sightings, which I find particularly interesting. But it was proposed pretty early on in Mothman. Once a West Virginia University professor told the press, like, I'm 100% positive this is what they're seeing. Although the four original eyewitnesses were shown pictures of this, you know, long-legged gray bird with red around its eyes, and they said, no, that's definitely not what I saw. So take it with a grain of salt, but in the 1960s, there was an article talking about migration of sandhill cranes east of the Mississippi River. So we do know that these birds were sort of in the area, although their wingspans and speed don't match up to what some eyewitness accounts said. I think we have to account for things like human adrenaline response, fear, the darkness, because these sightings were all at night. Which I do think there's something about the, you know, mythology and the not being able to see. Your senses are sort of heightened, at least maybe your sound and your touch, but your sight as humans is definitely dulled at night. So I think we need to account for that as well. I mean, there are tons of theories. We were told of, and I found my research theories, like teenagers playing pranks, dressing up in costumes. We've heard, you know, mutated animals from the nuclear testing that was going on there, the nuclear work. So there's so many different theories. But I think in general, what Mothman to me represents in a lot of ways is not just the, let me rephrase that. I think Mothman today is such an incredible figure that's still talked about so much because the people of Point Pleasant have embraced it as part of their culture. I mean, there's a statue of Mothman in the center of Point Pleasant, and the people I talk to there seem to accept it as part of their town's history and something that, you know, they can benefit from. But I personally, at least, didn't meet any like that, you know, were like, yes, I see it, we're friends. But I think all monsters that we still talk about today have to have that combination of mysteriousness, but maybe plausibility. So maybe it wasn't an extraterrestrial humanoid. Maybe it was a mutated, you know, bird. There's a possibility that someone could still find it that I think makes a lot of these monsters, including Mothman, really interesting and exciting.
We're talking about monsters in history. Dr. Emily Zarka, Dr. Z, joins us. We've got a lot more to come. And I have one more question before Randall's gets his in. More to come with Gene and Randall and Dr. Z. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got like, I guess, 60 or so different items, and entails t-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of t-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great t-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, and multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com, keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
I'm here with Scott Jusium, founder of OMG Tax. Tell us how your company helps our listeners out there who have a problem with the IRS.
My team of lawyers, enrolled agents, and licensed tax experts remove wage garnishments sometimes in the same day. We even have reduced the total debt some of our clients were required to pay through what is known as an offer in compromise.
Can you give us an example of somebody you help?
Oh, can I ever? We have taken a $500,000 liability with the IRS. Guess what? The client didn't pay a dime through the representation known as non-collectible status with the government.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000 and you want to see if it's possible to pay a lot less, call OMG Tax right now for a free tax-saving consultation.
Call 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. 800-486-8112. That's 800-486-8112.
This is Micah Hanks of the Gray Alien Report, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
My question, Dr. Z, some of those who speculated about Mothman want to connect it in some way to the collapse of the Silver Bridge.
Yes.
In Point Pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Did you look into that at all, or the timeliness 100%. Of that?
There is absolutely no evidence that any kind of creature, extraterrestrial, supernatural, or any real animal was connected to the Silver Bridge. It was a absolutely tragic thing, a design flaw that happened in the bridge that just happened to coincide with 13 months after the first sighting of Mothman. It killed 46 people, and it's something this town definitely still mourns. There are still memorials for the bridge. But I don't think that there's any connection between Mothman, real or imagined, and the Silver Bridge collapse. It's, again, just one of those really tragic and unfortunate circumstances that was bolstered as being something supernatural. And from the people I talked to in Point Pleasant who insist that Mothman had nothing to do with it, and some of them are actually offended that Mothman is connected to such a tragedy where, you know, some people... I met someone whose relative was actually... was meant to be driving across that bridge and didn't. So I think it's still very real to a lot of people who live there. And I think sometimes equating the monster to it is not something they respond to very well, rightfully so. But again, I think that that was more of an outsider perspective and saying like, oh, of course, Mothman happened, you know, a little over a year ago, so he made the bridge collapse. But there's no evidence I could find or anyone in the town could tell me that there is any connection.
So the question, did Mothman still appear to people after the bridge collapsed?
Yes. It depends on who you ask. Again, Mothman sightings definitely slowed down even before the Silver Bridge collapse. They pop up every once in a while. I know I mentioned the Chicago area. There were some Mothman sightings, I'm thinking, maybe in like the late 2010s. I believe like around 2017, I know there were a couple Mothman sightings. Again, these are sightings where, you know, a police officer said people flagged him down saying that they saw, you know, a large creature with wings. But then Chicago PD says no report to that account was actually filed. So like all monster stories, I feel like there's his, hers, and the truth, for lack of a better way of putting it. A lot of these things are sort of gray. But Mothman continues to pop up, usually when there's any kind of disaster, and I think that is where the Silver Bridge connection comes into play. Some people say that Mothman was at Chernobyl, and there's actually some photoshopped images out there showing some kind of vaguely Mothman figure there. But I think that anytime there's sort of a disaster, people want to attribute it to something supernatural. And I think that goes back to what a lot of monsters represent, is monsters are about fear and about things we don't understand. So I think in the case of some of these terrible tragedies, 9/11, actually, I believe there were some accounts saying that they saw, you know, a Mothman type visual in the smoke or something. I think that we find tragedy, real human, real life tragedy, to be so confusing and inexplicable in so many different ways that we say it's something supernatural because we want there to be an explanation that maybe makes it make more sense and can give people some kind of closure or understanding about the incident.
That all makes perfect sense. The idea that it could be a bird, though, giant birds are not just found, you know, in, say, Point Pleasant, mm-hmm. in terms of the mythology. That they've been sighted in a lot of places. There was a number of giant bird sightings in Alaska. We were talking about pilots who saw them in the daytime, and these would be big enough that if it was something that was on the ground and seen at night, you could think it was a person with wings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I know that there's been, I believe, some even, I don't know if there's scientific studies in some capacity of people who, even in relation to Mothman, would put, you know, these dummies of some kind of mannequin or animal figure and then be like, okay, guess, you know, from a distance at high speed at night, how big this thing was. And people would, by and large, completely over-exaggerate the size. I don't know enough about the human body to tell you how that works, but I actually know a lot about birds. I'm a bird volunteer at a local wildlife and rehabilitation facility, and some of them are massive and scary and make crazy noises. And like you said, there are actually a lot of monster legends around the world that are related to birds in some way, mostly predatory birds, but not always.
Right. You've heard of the Terror Tauren then, of course, right?
So I have not.
Oh.
Tell me. Okay. I'm intrigued.
You know, I'm not an expert on all of this when it comes to eidetically memorizing exactly where they, but you can certainly look it up. It was put together in a museum, I believe. Nobody, as far as I know, has actually found one, but if you look it up, you can, it's pretty interesting. And this is like a giant, big, black bird.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's like, that's my first reaction. I'm like, cool, awesome. I wish I could see one. Yeah. Well, I mean, but there's the dodo. We know the dodo. It's kind of a ridiculous-looking bird, but arguably could be monstrous because it is so strange-looking. We know it existed, but we just don't have it around now. So that is always, of course, the possibility for these, you know, winged monsters, even something like dragons or wyverns or that type of monster is, yeah, absolutely, finding, like you said, some very large bird at night that really did exist, or fossils also have been misinterpreted often throughout the years.
Right, yeah, I guess, you know, that we could go all the way back to pterodactyls and, mm-hmm. and flying dinosaur birds,
yep.
and such. But, I mean, you know, so who knows? Maybe these people really did see something, though, and we just don't know necessarily what it was. The descriptions from some of the witnesses don't really match the kind of flight characteristics of a bird. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, you hear of a witness saying, well, it just sort of flew straight up.
Yeah.
And birds really don't fly that way, do they?
I don't know enough about, but I think there maybe is one or two types of birds that can fly straight up, sort of like a helicopter. Yeah. But you're right.
Like a hummingbird can, but.
Hummingbirds are fascinating. I love hummingbirds. These are my two sides of my personality, right? It's like monsters and birds. But I think, again, I'm not one here to say that's not my job or what my research is trying to do of, you know, did John Smith see Mothman or not? Like you said, for all I know, that person definitely saw some kind of strange behavior or creature. But I guess I do lean more onto the side of evidence, not necessarily scientific evidence, but more cases. I think maybe if something like unidentified creature did exist like that, that we would probably have more consistent stories of it more often. But again, I'm not here to say if these things exist or not. I'm fascinated by why we even have these kind of conversations.
Oh yeah, for sure. Right. Like, I mean, it's for me, I tend to go, well, you know, I mean, I wonder if it could have been a bird. I guess maybe it's a guy thing too. I mean, I do love the cultural side of things as well, but I kind of go, well, how is that possible? If it's not really possible, then it probably wasn't a real bird, for example. Mm-hmm. So how do birds fly? Well, big birds with great big wings tend to need a lot of takeoff space, or they have to climb up on something and launch themselves off a cliff or a high place, you know, that kind of thing. So it's something the size of a Mothman. It wouldn't just be able to just flap its wings and fly straight up. It just goes against everything we seem to know about large birds taking flight.
I think that just because it seems impossible, it doesn't mean that it is. I think something even like, I think recently in the news, it came out that scientists are finally having an idea about how the flying snakes can actually quote unquote fly. I think that we learn more and more about the world around us every day, not even the world around us, the galaxy around us, right? I think that goes back to, we were having a discussion about unidentified aerial phenomena and extraterrestrials and sort of the things that lurk in the depths of our oceans. I mean, all these things, there's so much that we still haven't found yet. So maybe we just haven't found the real life fauna that actually inspired some of these legends.
When we get to our next segment, I want to ask you about the Loch Ness Monster. Have you looked into that at all?
I have a little bit, yes.
We're going to talk about that in our next segment. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And we're having lots of fun talking here about monsters and other monster possibilities to get into, not just birds, of course, Mothman or Mothbird or whatever it was, but certainly things like werewolves. A lot of strange things out there. And when we talk about Dracula, what about legends of vampires, people who maybe decided that the liquid they like was not Diet Coke, but Diet Blood. Oh, yeah? All right. We're talking about here Monstrum. We have Dr. Emily Zarka, affectionately known as Dr. Z, with Gene and Randall, affectionately known as who knows. You're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Classic science fiction at its best. Available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Today, many of us are paying attention to our health, and what we eat plays an important role. But so often the water we drink is a mere afterthought when it should be a primary part of our daily nutrition. Real Water would like to change how you think about the water you drink and how it can play an important role in helping your body restore balance and reach its full potential. The key benefits of every bottle of Real Water are stabilized negative ions, balanced pH, detoxification, and it hydrates you like never before. And yes, it tastes great. Real Water is beyond alkalinity, and due to its proprietary process called E2 Technology, it's the only drinking water on the market that can maintain a stable negative ionization, which means real science in every bottle. Order your real water today and take advantage of special pricing for this audience only by calling 1-855-REALWTR or visiting buyrealwaternow.com. That's 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com. Order now. 1-855-REALWTR or buyrealwaternow.com.